Brought to you by Black Knight, it's the Technology.ie podcast, episode 25 for April 19th, 2012, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinichon. Dias Marivagas Kith Faltroivishtach. Hello and welcome to the Technology.ie podcast. My name is Conor Muinichon in the Edgecast Media Studio. And let's see who's out there on Skype. Calling Michaela Nealon, CEO of Black Knight. Are you there, Michaela?
Hi, how's it going, Con? Yes, I'm here.
Where are you?
And I'm not anywhere interesting. I'm still in Carlo, sorry.
Very good. And in Serbia, in Belgrade, Nebojša Radović is our guest this evening. Hi, Nebojša.
Hello from Belgrade.
You're the author of a blog called ENIACS, ENIACS.net, is that correct?
Yeah, it's ENIACS, actually. I made it from my nickname is ENIAC, and I needed like a blog of ENIAC is ENIAC's blog, and it's shorter with an X.
With so. An X, ENIAX.net. Where did you get the nickname, Nebojša?
Oh, it's interesting story. You know, when we all started with those internet things, we needed those cool nicknames, you know, when we wanted to be hackers and stuff. And then I decided to be the first computer, which is ENIAC. Mm. And that's how I got my first nickname. And, you know, it remained during over the years.
Very
my
good.
First email was ENIAC@mnet.eu, and then, you know, on Twitter and stuff. And now everybody knows me like that.
Very good. Well, we're going to get to know you a little bit later on and a little bit better in the podcast this evening and talk to you a little bit later on about the work that you do. Thanks for joining us on the show. We're also going to talk about all kinds of stuff this week. Lots of stuff to do with Facebook in relation to privacy, in relation to their compliance with the Irish Data Protection Commissioner audit. We're going to talk about Irish tech as well. Chris Horn had some interesting points there during the week in relation to floating companies on NASDAQ and using NASDAQ as a measure of the seriousness in the technology world of a nation. I'm going to talk about Viber in a minute. I blogged about it today. Michaela, you've been blogging as well about the anniversary of the Titanic. We're kind of Titanic sick at this stage, aren't we? There's been a lot of commemoration, of course. It's the centenary of, the centenary of the maiden voyage, of the launch, and of course, the tragic sinking of the Titanic 100 years ago this month.
Yeah, and it's been interesting because up in Belfast, they opened a big Titanic area thing. I mean, some kind of museum and memorial, and there were events up there. And there were also several events in Cove, which, of course, was Queenstown at the time.
Yeah.
It was the last port that the Titanic called into before heading out into the Atlantic and obviously sinking.
Our kids have been doing stuff about it in school and everything, of course. It's everywhere and it's understandable. I saw something during the week where they said that for a long time, Belfast was a little bit embarrassed about the Titanic and didn't tend to talk about it. And then, I suppose, in the spirit of glasnost and openness and new confidence which Belfast has enjoyed over the last 10 years or so, part of it has been a re-embracing, really, hasn't it, of the heritage of the Titanic. And now it's something they're celebrating.
Yeah, but I mean, some of the celebration was a bit, well, strange, I suppose. So I came across something over the last couple of days where you've got Tato Crisps have issued or released, I don't know, how do you issue or do you release a new type of flavour? They're doing Titanic crisps?
Yes, and I don't know, is this a bad taste or a joke or something, but they're just saying that they're lightly salted. Titanic.
I'm just thinking to myself, it's like anything and everything to do with the Titanic. I mean, you have it, okay, you can commemorate us, but you have to be respectful. At the same time, do you really want to tie your brand to something that sank on its first outing?
It's funny, I think, and we talked about James Cameron on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, Michaela. I think the success of the Titanic movie and everything has shifted slightly the perception of the Titanic. Sure, absolutely, it was a tragedy. It was an appalling disregard for human life in terms of the lack of lifeboats and I suppose the overconfidence with which they put to sea. There might be a lesson there for modern times in relation to overconfidence in that as well. But one of the things I think that the movie in particular focused on was the I suppose the grandeur of the ship, how it was the most the largest, the most impressive passenger liner of its time, what it represented in terms of technology, seeing as we're a technology podcast, and all that at the time. And I suppose that has been something that has kind of displaced a little bit the downside. Certainly, it's hard to argue with the downside, but it certainly has kind of displaced that, hasn't it? And we tend to think more very often about the grand, luxurious and impressive side of the Titanic as well.
Yeah, and you kind of forget that if you were Irish and you were on the Titanic, well, you were dead. Probably.
Yeah. Nebojša, is it what's the view on the Titanic in Serbia? Is it attracting the same kind of attention in Belgrade as it is in Ireland and other parts of the world?
Yeah, I'm not really the news guy, but I spotted lots of articles about Titanic. And there is some local context to that. They were writing that lots of people from Serbia who were on Titanic had cheaper tickets, or very cheap tickets, so probably most of them died, which is probably the case with Irish people as well.
Yes.
You mentioned that only the ones with, you know, more expensive tickets actually survived. So actually, this is the case with Serbia as well.
Yeah.
And you probably have the Titanic 3D in the cinemas, and lots of talk was about that as well, because it's just, you know, centenary and the movie came at the same time. So yeah. that's about it, what I spotted in last week.
Yeah, my wife's niece was going to see the movie there last week. Big occasion. It's how many years since that film came out? Is it 12, 13 years more?
It's more. Must be more at this stage, surely. Let's check.
Yeah, 99th, I guess, something like that.
You can Google and IMDb that. I saw you blogging about IMDb during the week as well, Michele.
Well, that's actually earlier today. Yes, yeah. It's the 404 page on the IMDb site.
That's right, yeah.
I think James spotted it earlier and sent me a link. And it is absolutely, it's genius. It's so simple and so clever and it's so funny.
That's
like every time you refresh the 404 page, you get a different movie quote.
That's a trend recently, and it's something actually that people kind of advise you to do, is to make the most of the 404 opportunity. If somebody mistypes a link on your site, well, you know, it is still an opportunity for you to do something, entertain them, impress them, or something like that. You see it increasingly on a lot of sites, and on this one, what they do with IMDb.com is they give you a 404 message that is some version of a movie quote. There were some impressive ones there. I can't recall any of them now at the moment. Do you remember?
I'm just looking at it now. Yeah. Like, here's one from Airplane. Surely you can't be serious. And I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
That's right.
This one I thought was pretty good. I've got a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore, from The Wizard of Oz.
That's right, when you end up in the 404.
I mean, there's a load of them. And yeah, I think you spotted a few that they'd adapted a well-known quote and just made it a little bit more web-friendly or something.
They did.
I just thought it was, you know, it's really simple, really effective.
There was one from, they were quoting the Muppet movie from 1979, and it's, what is it? Someday we'll find it. The Something Connection, it's Kermit the Frog, it's a song, I know. I won't hum it for you, but they've rewritten that to say Someday we'll find it, the website connection. Now, definitely they weren't talking about websites in 1979, whatever else they were talking about. Let's move on. Did you find out the date, by the way, of Titanic, James Cameron's version of it?
1997, yeah.
97, all right. Well, that is certainly not
today. So we both Googled really quick. This is the youth on our side here, Colm.
It is, yeah. Well, I'm too busy talking to type or anything like that. Let's move on. What I blogged about this week on technology.ie was the sensation of being late to the party and discovering that everyone else was talking about some new technology and I knew nothing about it. Now, in particular, and that's not a familiar feeling for me. Usually I go to family gatherings, as I did over the weekend, and people are saying, "Can it give us a look at your phone there? You know, what kind of gadgets, what kind of apps, what's the latest this, that or the other? Can you recommend a laptop or something like that?" This time I had another family member point out a new app to me that I hadn't come across before. And when I started using it, I discovered that a whole load of my non-tech friends were already using it. And one of them even sent me a message and said, "I'm surprised you're only discovering this now." I'm talking about Viber, which is a VoIP app. It gives free calls and texts over IP. And Michaela, you've been using it for a while as well.
Yeah, and it just doesn't work for me. I mean, come on, Con. Like, before we got on this on the show, you tried ringing me on it.
I did, and in fairness it was. No, we were in a crowded pub when I tried it out with my sister-in-law over the weekend, and I couldn't really evaluate it based on that. Although, in fairness, we were both using 3G, and I thought it was okay. Now, this time I called you, I was on Wi-Fi from an Android phone, and I called you on your iPhone using, you were on Wi-Fi as well, yeah?
Yeah, I was. I mean, I had to call you back over GSM. I mean,
you couldn't hear what I was saying.
No. You were breaking up on me. It was like a really, really, really bad Skype call. And I've tried it in the past with my sister in Australia, yeah. And it was just a total disaster. It was fine for texting, but having an actual conversation, I just couldn't manage it.
Now, I went and looked some more about it. It is interesting because just like Skype, it sort of integrates it in. I don't know what the iPhone experience is like, but it integrates it in with your contact list, for example, to the extent that now when I browse my contact list on my Android phone and when I click on call, it now gives me three options. One is to call using GSM, one is to call using Skype, and one now is to call using Viber. And you can see how if that, you know, if the experience was good, that would be kind of compelling. But at the same time, I went and had a look at, I Googled some of this and I found an interesting discussion on the Vodafone customer service forums, which I'll post in with the notes on this as well. And it turns out that, the mobile phone companies aren't entirely happy about you using VoIP, especially if you're not, you know, paying for some kind of a data plugin or a data add-on with them as well. So there was a lot of confusion in relation to that. People being told that they had to buy a VoIP add-on, for example, from Vodafone, and then some corrections on that and the customer service guy coming back and saying, well, actually, no, if you're on a regular data plan, you don't need to buy an extra add-on. But, for example, VoIP is completely banned on pay-as-you-go on Vodafone.
Well, but this isn't the first we've heard of this kind of thing. I mean, even on some of the Wi-Fi hotspots that I connect to when I'm traveling, you get nice big warnings telling you that VoIP services and peer-to-peer are banned.
Are they really such a bandwidth hog, though, Michele? I mean, peer-to-peer is one thing, perhaps, but let's say voice-only, voice over IP, let's say Skype or something like that. We're talking about, you know, I suppose a couple of hundred couple of hundred kilobits a second or something like that. You know, you're not talking about a huge bandwidth hog, or are you? Or is it more a case of the fact that this is money which is being denied this is business basically which is being denied to the regular telephone service providers?
I think there's somewhere in the middle lies the truth. I mean, what I've seen, like say in some of the hotels where I stay, they'll give me a free Wi-Fi connection, but with certain restrictions. If I want to have completely unrestricted use of it, I need to upgrade to a paid service of some kind, which is a bit more than a little frustrating, because I mean, I'm staying in a business hotel. I'm not there for pleasure. I'm not. I mean, I need to have access to certain things. But I mean, I've found in the past that, you know, one Skype call on some of these Wi-Fi connections, I end up eating up my entire data allowance within, like, say, 10, 15 minutes.
What distinguishes Viber, and what I thought really distinguished it from Skype, is the fact that you don't have to sign up and create a Skype ID or a Viber ID. What it does is it actually says your phone number is your Viber ID. They send you a text message so that you can authenticate that this is your phone number. And then that's basically it. And not only that, but everyone else who's in your contact list is uniquely identified in the ordinary way by their phone numbers. But now Viber identifies them as well through that phone number as well. That's an interesting database, isn't it, that they're building up of names and phone numbers and who's in whose address book?
Well, I don't know what they're doing with that. I mean, maybe Nebojsa has some idea on it. I haven't really looked into it that much myself. I mean, Nebojsa, do you have any experience of this?
Yeah, there was some controversy about that, because they're actually stealing your phone, your address book. Mm. So, you know, along with PET, maybe you heard of PET.
Yes.
Application. Well, so there was a lot of controversy because people don't like that. So technically, they use your address book and take all the contacts, and then, you know, they can handle with them as much as they want, and they can do whatever they want. So it's pretty, you know, it's, as Mikhail said, the truth is somewhere in between, because on one side we like that.
there was controversy about Facebook doing that as well, wasn't there, recently? They upload your phone book as well. If you install the Facebook
app. It's a fact as well. But they will still do that. You know, they just need more people and more contacts that they want to grow. So I don't think it's going to change very, very soon.
But isn't that a very interesting? I mean, let's say you log on to Twitter and Twitter can see who your friends are, but it only knows us by Twitter IDs. Doesn't it give you a much larger scope to build a social graph of connections when you have access to all of your users' address books, telephone address books? Aren't telephone numbers more useful really than anything else?
Yeah, but it goes a bit more to privacy.
That's what I mean. It's more useful to the company, not to you.
You know, I don't like to be contacted over the phone, and I don't know. It's email is still, you know, you can read an email and you know or not. But with phone, you know, you just reply your call, and then they take your time whenever they want and tell you whatever they want. And that's what I don't like about phones generally. And that's why I don't like to give my phone number like that. You know, you can take my email address, but not my phone number. And that's probably the basis of the whole controversy, because, you know, people don't like their numbers everywhere on the internet.
I mean, I have the same problem. I mean, people ring me and want to spend, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes of my time trying to sell me something I'm not interested in. If they send me an email, I can evaluate, and if I'm interested, then maybe we might have a conversation.
Mm. Exactly, yeah.
Nebojsa, you also talked about in the notes there, so you mentioned Vox.io. Have you used that service?
Yeah, actually, I talked with my colleague from Austria last week about Vox.io, and he told me that it was more useful in US than Viber, because he had the same troubles as you did. With you know, connection problem. So technically, Vox.io is a Slovenian application. Great guys from Slovenia built it, and it's very useful because, you know, you whenever you go to some country in the world, which is your case, for example, you just change your number in Vox.io, and people can call you on that service, and you get the call on your phone, whatever SIM card is in your device. So you should try it as well. It's not that big as Viber. Viber is also very big in Serbia. People use it very much because it's very cheap, especially teenagers, because they don't like to pay, you know, for text and for calls. That's why they use Viber so much. And Vox.io is a great alternative because it works better. At least I heard that it works better for many people who use it. So it's Vox.io.
Yeah, it's somebody also mentioned a couple of other services people mentioned, Tango.me. I haven't tried it or looked at it in any way. And you mentioned WhatsApp as well, WhatsApp.com. I just realized, Michele, you mentioned that to me this evening, but I just realized I've used it before on a previous phone, and I'd forgotten about it. In fact, it obviously didn't make an impression.
On BlackBerry. WhatsApp is very popular on BlackBerry, and that's how it came to iPhone as well.
All right. That's again, though, coming back to this whole issue of privacy, we're trading our privacy, really, aren't we, Nebojsa, for these free services? And if Viber is offering you a free service, not charging you for anything, you've got to ask yourself, well, how are they planning to make money, or what is it of the data that I have that they're planning to use to make money from?
Well, that whole data mining thing goes like in insane dimension, because now they know who am I calling, where do people that I'm calling live, how much money they spend on Viber and stuff. All those analytical data is really, and data thing is going really, you know, in a direction that I don't want to think about it, because they are now analyzing more and more of everything we do, and they want to get the most out of us. But on the other side, you have examples of services such as Instagram and I don't know, maybe pets, and you don't have business model behind them, and you don't know how they will monetize all that data, but still they are doing that very well.
We talked about this last week. Instagram had a great business model. Build this service. Don't have any business model or any way of making revenue. Take a few million in investment and eventually flip it for a billion to Facebook. I mean, that's a great business model. It's not really a very reliable one, though, I think.
Yeah, it's only an American story. Yeah.
Go on, Michele, what were you saying?
No, sorry. It's just, you know, it comes back to that phrase I think a lot of people have used when talking about a lot of these social networks and Web 2.0 businesses. You are the product.
Hmm.
It's us, the user. It's the data about what we like, what we don't like, what we watch, what we share with our friends, what we consider to be of interest. This is what the value is. And, you know, it's a nasty little trade-off between, you know, your privacy and access to some service.
What do you prefer, Nebojsa, yourself in general to do? Do you prefer to pay for a service or to use a free service knowing that you're trading some of your data and some of your, the opportunity to market to you?
Well, I still like to, for example, I'm paying for Skype because I like the service it provides, you know, especially when you're traveling a lot, you really need something like that. Mm. And it's not a problem about the money, it's a problem about reliability, because if I pay for something, I want that service to work. And it's not really always the case with free apps. Especially, you mentioned that Viber is not working very well. Probably that's the case. If you don't have healthy business model behind it, probably you don't have the healthy infrastructure for all that, then it goes all in wrong direction. That's why I still use Skype and not the Viber, even though it's very popular and many people use it.
Michele, you got a shiny new toy this week. You were telling us about it just before you started. Some storage for your home.
Yeah, I mean, I've got this silly problem at the moment because as some people know, all my computers were stolen when the house was broken into. So I've ended up using older machines that, well, they're functional, but they're not exactly amazing. And, of course, they don't have large hard drives. So I was running out of disk space on the desktop that I'm using here in the evenings. So I went off and I got this iOmega device, and wow. Is all I'll say. Wow, it's something else. It's got so many cool features. I've only started exploring them, but so far it solved all my storage issues. It's got 3 terabytes of data. I can use it to back up pretty much everything I have and will have for the foreseeable future. And I can share media easily across my home network. Plus, it allows me to upload stuff to Flickr and Facebook, and I can do online backups to some of the cloud services very, very easily as well.
What's the model number of what you've got, Michele?
It's what they call an iOmega Home Media Network Hard Drive Cloud Edition.
Okay.
You did ask.
I did. I'm just Googling, I'm browsing the iOmega site here. They're an EMC company. I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, they bought them a few years ago. I'm not too sure when exactly. But, I mean, if you remember iOmega, they were the ones, you know, the zip drives back in the day, which we all had. Mm. And here, a friend of mine who was working for the Sunday Business Post, iOmega gave him a bunch of drives and devices as a kind of a going-away present when he was heading off to the States, and I bought the entire lot off him. So I've got loads of iOmega devices already, and they work really, really well with the Mac. So I knew that I wasn't going to have problems getting it working with the Mac because it would just work properly and sanely and support Mac features like Time Machine without having to worry about it.
So what's in it? What's under the hood? Is there RAID? Is there redundancy? What have you got?
Well, oddly enough, no. There isn't a huge amount of redundancy. I mean, it's a single drive.
Okay.
But what it's got, what it allows you to do, I can share an image I took earlier today of the control panel. Yeah. It allows you to do things like, okay, date and time, you can sync that with an NTP server. It's got energy saving settings, so you can be really eco-friendly if you want to be. You've got a whole range of options in terms of the storage, and you can slice stuff up and give particular users special access to specific slices of the space. But the kind of stuff that really intrigues me and something I really want to play with is this kind of intelligent folder concept. So what you do is you'd say, right, this folder over here, this is going to be my Flickr folder, and you authenticate with your Flickr account, and any photos you drop into that folder will automatically be uploaded to your Flickr account in the background. So you don't have to, you know, open up the Flickr app or go to the Flickr website or anything like that. You just, you know, dump the files in and it'll just do its thing in the background.
Presumably you can log into Flickr later and do tags and descriptions and titles and things like that. But it's like Dropbox for, it's like an intelligent Dropbox for that app for that online service.
Well, yes, but it's also got the idea of creating your own private cloud.
Right.
Which, and I only took delivery of it yesterday. I played around with it for a few hours last night, but I mean, I was shifting a load of data from one machine onto it, so that kind of, you know, that kind of ate up all my time. But you can do things like you can connect multiple devices of this model with other devices elsewhere. So I could hypothetically set up another one in the office and have the two talk to each other.
Okay. And have essentially common storage between them. So if you put thing on one, it'll show up, they'll sync over the net.
But the other thing as well, which I thought was really cool, is it has built-in support for Amazon's S3. Mm. And okay. I think Mozzie's another one of the backup services it has integration with. So, you know, you don't have, you know, it's all kind of a nice, easy to use web interface. You don't need to be an uber geek to use this thing, but it gives you access to a load of quite powerful features.
It does sound like a kind of a power users thing. You know, it's more than just a home user's device. I mean, your average home user probably will find that there's more features in this than they need.
Well, yeah, but I mean, look who you're talking to. I mean, yeah. Of course I was going to go off and get something with, you know, stupid number of features. I mean, for Christ's sake, my TV can read Twitter and I can actually tweet from my TV these days.
What's it running in terms of OS or anything like that? Is it something proprietary or something recognizable?
It seems to be something proprietary. I mean, it has a web interface. There's client software you can get for your iPhone, for your Mac, for PC, for Linux, and everything else. I presume there's one for Linux. Actually, I haven't checked. It's running some kind of operating system on there, and it has RAM, and it has, you know, it's not like a dumb hard drive. I mean, it's actually got stuff on there. So it's,
and the capacity,
I'm
then
storing
it. What kind of storage are we talking about?
3 terabytes.
3 terabytes, okay, excellent.
I mean, it comes in 3 different models. It comes in a 1 terabyte, a 2 terabyte, the 3 terabyte model.
What did that cost you? If you don't mind me asking.
Oh, I don't mind. I just can't remember. I think it's about €250, including shipping.
That is pretty good now.
It was actually cheaper to buy it from Amazon than it was to buy it directly from iOmega.
So it's a single disc then, in that case, is what it is.
Yeah. But I mean, the funny thing is that, you know, with iOmega stuff, generally speaking, you can buying it directly from them. It's actually £208 is what is the current list price. So whatever that is, in euro.
I'm thinking something like that, where perhaps something in between that and maybe what I have would have done us here for the office, because, you know, we have a small media production company office here, and, you know, we have various workstations and a certain amount of a need for backup and a need for shared storage. What we've ended up with is a sort of entry level NAS box that we bought from Dell. The entire package, I think, and it's got RAID 5 in it. There's 4 disks and it's hot swappable and all kinds of stuff like that. Lovely and all of that, but really, in a lot of respects, sometimes I think it's just a very expensive heater for the office. And it's running, what is it, Windows Server 2008, and at the end of the day, doesn't have any of these fancy kind of user-friendly services that you're talking about here. And I think perhaps something somewhere in between might be more what I could have done with. What do you use, Nebojsa, for your storage? Do you have some kind of NAS solution, or what do you do?
Not really. I'm not really one of the guys who need that much of a storage. Mm. I have some, you know, external hard drives, not bigger than 1 terabyte, and that's enough for me.
Yeah.
Because you know, I'm working from my home, and I really don't need that much of a space to share data. For me, that's more for like people who have big companies or who are working with video files or something like that. You know, because
that's it in our case, and that's why we you know, we did a lot of work with audio. We've done more with video now, and that really drove us to looking for some kind of central storage. So you've got basically external USB drives in that.
Yeah, something like that. And I use Dropbox a lot for, you know, sharing files over the network.
Yeah.
So generally Dropbox, you know, satisfies me in amount that I need. So it's like just a couple of gigabytes. I don't need more for sharing.
Michele, we're gonna look forward to hearing about your adventures in relation to this. The Flickr thing sounds interesting, and anything else you discover as well. You'll blog about it for us when you get a chance, will you?
Oh, I intend to. I mean, it's, you know, the thing with something like this is, it's like, you know, I got a new TV, I got a new Blu-ray player. They've got so many features that I go off and I explore the menus and I look at them and I kind of go, ooh, that's cool. Now what the hell am I going to do with it? You know, it's, but I mean, it's like Nebojsa says, I mean, for a lot of people, this kind of thing, it's complete overkill. For me, part of it is when, you know, I run a hosting company. I worry about disaster recovery. I worry about data storage. But I mean, a lot of the stuff that I would have on computers here, it's replaceable. It's more to do with ease of use, ease of access. And, you know, I don't enjoy having to recover things from backups unless I can absolutely avoid it.
What would happen to you, Michele, if the house burnt down?
I'd cry.
Would it be catastrophic in terms of data loss from your point of view?
No.
No, are you backed up off-site is what I'm asking you, really, I suppose.
Well, no, it's not even that, Con. I mean, the reality is, I mean, if it, you know, I work in an office, but even if the office burnt down, it wouldn't actually be that bad. Well, I suppose actually it would when I think about it in some ways. But, I mean, you know, a lot of the data that stuff I work with is it's in a cloud type thing. I mean, it's on the network. It's stored somewhere remotely. I'm interacting with something that has, you know, multiple backups and backups of the backups and exists in databases and, you know, it's not like, you know, back in the day when you had all your data on a floppy disk, and if that floppy went, then, you know, you were snookered. You know, it's not. I don't work like that exactly.
What about you, Nebojsa? Do you back up offsite?
Yeah, I just thought that if I have to choose between losing my apartment or losing my Gmail account, I would probably go for apartment because my whole life is in my Gmail. So, as Michele said, everything is in the cloud. So most of the important data is somewhere uploaded. So that's the beauty of, you know, good internet connection and you know, cheap storage.
It's funny. So, I think a lot of the... Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, I think in our case, I think a lot of the work stuff would be replaceable. A lot of it is in the cloud. But the one thing that I need to make sure that I take care of is, let's say, the family photograph of the last 7-8 years of my kids growing up. I don't think that's replaceable. And certainly right now, I've got to admit, if there was a fire in the house or something like that, I would lose some very important stuff. Everyone is in that situation, of course, but there is an opportunity to back up off-site, and I think it's probably something I should...
Yeah, and I had the... Sorry, I'm just changing the topic for a second. My birthday was like 5 days ago, and I got some, you know, online books. And it's like, that's, you know, the times are changing and we're getting the virtual gifts.
Yeah.
And it's just not the same, even though, you know, you're happy because you got something. But when you get something physical, you know, it's a different emotion that's going to change. And that's probably the biggest shift.
It's funny. I feel somehow happier about things being in the cloud than having the responsibility of looking after them under my own roof. But I'm not sure. It's definitely something we've got to change and get used to. I want to talk about Facebook. We're going to talk about that in a while. I want to talk about your own work, Nebojsa, as well. We'll take a break, first of all, and ask Michele to tell us, what are Black Knight Solutions doing this week?
Well, the big thing for us at the moment is we're on a hiring drive. I mean, we're looking for staff. And at the moment, we have 3 positions that we're advertising. But we plan to take on other staff over the next few months. So, you know, the promotion for us is we're promoting ourselves, as in, come work for us. If you're a programmer in Serbia or Montenegro or somewhere like that, and you want to come and work for a company in Ireland, we've got work for you.
Oh, that's great. So share some links with me and I will share with my lists people.
I will. But in terms of special offers, I mean, the other thing that we've been pushing a lot over the last few weeks is the free 30-day trial for our mobile site builder. And you can find out more about that on our website and sign up and, you know, create a mobile version of your site.
You can find out more about all of these, about special offers and indeed about Black Knight hiring opportunities on the blog at blog.blackknight.com.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
You're listening to the Technology.ie podcast with Conor Muinichon in the Edgecast Media Studio. In his home in Carlow, we've got Black Knight CEO Michaela Nealon. And in his home in Belgrade, Serbia, we have Nebojša Radović. Nebojša is our special guest this week. Nebojša, tell me what you do.
I'm the owner of an online marketing agency here in Serbia with a special emphasis on social media promotions. So technically, I'm helping huge brands here in Serbia to be cool online, especially on social media, yeah. So in the last 2 years, as I'm doing business under my own brand, we helped, we work with lots of brands. Maybe some of you, some of the brands you probably heard, such as Toshiba, you know, MTV, Erste Bank, which is a very big bank here in Serbia, then Nokia, Adidas, and other brands. Really, really lots of great things were done in the last couple of years. So we're mostly doing like Facebook promotions and Twitter promotions because there are not so many popular, you know, social networks other than these two here in Serbia.
So do you consider yourself technology or a computer or a social media person who understands marketing or a marketing person who understands social media?
Generally, my background is technical. I finished computer science, so it's probably the biggest advantage of my, you know, background is that whatever I do, I understand the technical, you know, side of the business. Mm. So I'm probably the tech guy with marketing, you know, talents or whatever it's called.
Cool.
And that's how everything started. So I help, you know, they have some idea which is marketing related, yeah. And I help them to realize that in technical, you know, sense. So if I haven't confused you with my language, it's late.
Not at all.
That's about it.
No, that's spot on. And is social media marketing becoming very very important and significant in Serbia?
Yeah, actually, it's quite a while. I decided to start with my own company when it was obvious that it's going to grow. So technically now every bigger company in Serbia wants to be on social media, wants to be on Facebook, to have their own Facebook applications and other activations that make them interesting online. So, and you always have now the mobile operators are competing who is going to have more likes on Facebook, more followers on Twitter and stuff. So it's really going mainstream here. Facebook and Twitter are everywhere in cafes, you know, on posters, billboards, everywhere. It's just, you know, it's not anymore, you know, a niche. It's now, you know, just everywhere.
And you also, as we mentioned at the start of the show, you have this online persona of ENIAC and you have this website, ENIACs.net. That's more indulging your technical and I suppose computer side. Is it is that more of a part-time thing or a hobby thing for you now?
Actually, everything started with that blog because I started writing in 2005. And somehow it, you know, it built up my persona, as you mentioned. So I got lots of traction from you know, media, from business people and stuff. And thanks to my blog and text there about social media, social networks, how to build your own online business. You know, they started to call me to look for my, you know, services, and that's how everything started. So technically, my blog is about online marketing in general, but with emphasis on social media, how to be cool online, how to make your Facebook page look great, how to use social media for some, you know, activism, you know, because, you know, still in Serbia is in transition period and those NGOs are very active and stuff like that.
Nebojša sounds like the Damian Mulley of Serbia, Michele. What do you think?
Oh, he is. I met Nebojša. I mean, be perfectly honest, calling Nebojša is kind of hard for me. I know him as ENIAC.
Yes.
Yeah, it's okay.
I mean, sorry. I was introduced to him as ENIAC when I met him at the Webfest event in Montenegro last year. And I hope he's going to be at the one this September. Are you planning to go?
Oh, I don't know, because I have some plans to go to San Francisco in September. So,
Come on! I'm going all the way to Montenegro, and I was hoping you'd be there.
Yeah, they offered me a position of chief entertainment officer for this conference. So, it's going to be hard to reject that, but we'll make some negotiations about that.
The thing about Naboche is, I mean, he's a cool guy who knows his stuff. I mean, that's one of the reasons I wanted him to come on and talk to us, because, he really impressed me. He's a cool guy.
It sounds to me like there's a lot of fun at these conferences, Michele. I think I'm beginning to understand the attraction.
Well, it depends. I mean, look, the ICANN meetings, as I've explained to you, there is a lot of work.
A lot of meetings.
The Webfest event, for me, was just it was absolutely amazing. I just thought to myself, my God, wow, this is the kind of event that I could go to, and I could go to it again and again and again, because you were meeting with people from all over that region of Europe, and they left their egos outside the door. They were very, very genuine, very open, and it was just really invigorating. So I'm really looking forward to the next one in September.
Yeah, it's the best thing about Webfest is that it's on the seaside, and Montenegrin coast is really beautiful. And when you go to that setting, everything is much easier because people are happy. The seaside, music, and that's probably one of the most important things about that conference. And because people they don't feel the tension about going to conference. But they are very relaxed on the very first moment. So you should visit this conference this year.
Do you travel a lot yourself, Naboche?
Yeah, actually I stopped. It was the same case as for Michele. I traveled a lot, whole region, whole Europe actually. Lots of conferences because people know me that I'm a blogger and they want to be written about them. So I've been to Lviv in Paris like 2 times. I've been to Romania, to Macedonia, Croatia, Slovenia, like whole region.
Yeah.
And at some point of time, it's interesting, to meet people and stuff. But in the end, you realize that it's not so easy to work, remotely, especially if you have a small company. And I suffered a lot, and my business couldn't grow more because I was traveling so much. Mm. And that's how I decided to, to be very...
selective.
To think a bit more about going to conferences than I did that before.
How would you characterize the tech scene in Eastern Europe, Naboche, and in Serbia and Montenegro and that region in particular?
It's growing. It's growing really fast because everybody knows that there is a lot of tech talent here. Lots of developers and stuff, but no one knows how to run business. And that's actually the problem of whole region. But that's changing. You have lots of events, lots of conferences. More and more companies are succeeding on a global scale. So things are changing.
So who would be the really big, well known companies coming out from that region that we might have heard of?
Maybe you heard of Nordius. You probably met Branko at Webfest. They're a football manager for Facebook. And they have 7 million active players on Facebook. They are very profitable. For 50 people here in Belgrade, really, really successful.
What site is that? What company?
It's a company is called Nordius, and the game is called Top 11. It's a football manager. You probably played something like that.
Top 11. Right. I'm just Googling as we speak here.
And you have
all right.
The funny thing is that you have like lots of companies that are very low profile here, but they are very successful in again on the global scale. Mm. For example, Vertical Search Engine Vest, which was evaluated with more like couple million dollars, was built completely in Serbia, more than 100 people. Then a limo search service called Groundlink is also based in Serbia, more than 100 people. Customer care is also in Belgrade, so it's really funny to see lots of people working some great things and not knowing about them in Belgrade. And it's changing. Those companies are now, coming out of a closet, and they're trying to exchange their knowledge with other people and to help our ecosystem grow more fastly.
I want to move on and talk about Facebook. In the last week or two, it emerged that the commitments they had given the Irish Data Protection Commissioner in relation to privacy audits and various information that they would make available to users in terms of showing you what they what data they hold on you and things like that, it emerged that they kind of missed the deadline of quarter one, end of March, 31st of March, for that. They've been criticised by a group called, is it Europe versus Facebook? Europe-v-facebook.org is the website. They're a group of privacy advocates, I think you could say, or anti-Facebook advocates based in Austria, it seems, who have really made a case of this, and were, I suppose, one of the groups and peoples who actually led to the complaints against Facebook being investigated in the first place by the Data Protection Commissioner. Facebook Europe being in Dublin, headquartered in Dublin, it seems that Michaela, the Irish Data Protection Commissioner, has a pretty big role on a European stage in relation to this.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. I mean, this is one of the things that makes me cringe a little bit at times when I go to international internet policy events and there's nobody from Ireland there. I mean, there's nobody from the Irish government. They don't play around at IGF. They don't play at ICANN. It's quite worrying. But yeah, because you've got those big companies like Google, Facebook, PayPal and a rake of others setting up shop in Dublin. Their European headquarters are in Dublin. When an issue like this arises, it's going to have to be somebody from the Irish government who's going to have to deal with it. Mm. And in the case of the entire Facebook debacle, it's going to be the Irish Data Privacy Commissioner. Well, and you know, this has been going on there for months.
So they missed the deadline, as it were, in terms of the commitments. Now, this was announced in December, and there was going to be a whole load of changes and data and things that Facebook had to provide between now and July when they're going to be audited again in relation to this. But there was a Q1 deadline, March 31st, 2012. They were supposed to have some certain features available. They didn't actually do that. The Data Protection Commissioner said, okay, they came out and said, so much of what we have is available, so much isn't. One of the core things in this is you being able to download and view the data which Facebook holds on you. And they said they have enhanced that tool. You can now download even more things and see what it is Facebook holds on you. But it's not really that impressive. I don't know if either of you have tried it.
Well, I mean, the amount of data I've shared on Facebook, I actually don't want to try it.
Yeah, but you know something? I tried it yesterday, Michaela, and it's rather underwhelming. I mean, I go in there. Maybe I haven't shared that much on Facebook. I don't know. It's interesting. It doesn't tell you much more than Timeline would in some respects. But it's interesting. You can go in and see everything you've ever posted on Facebook, all the photos you've put up. There's a section on it. It basically downloads a zip file. You open it up and there's a whole lot of HTML files in there and some other stuff like that. You go in you know, for example, there's a file called Friends. You go in and you see that it's just a list of the names of all your friends, nothing else in relation to them. It isn't that impressive in a way. What I was hoping, what I thought would be interesting, would be to see what does Facebook know about the browsing I do when I'm not logged into Facebook? What are all those like buttons telling Facebook about the sites I visit, as I say, when I'm not logged into Facebook?
You're talking basically about the social graph thing.
Yeah, I'm talking about the fact that the cookies know where for example, yeah. when you this is more than social graph. This is, for example, if I leave Facebook.com, shut it down and decide now I'm going to go and browse RTE.ie or you go to technology.ie, for example, we've got like buttons on there. You're logged into Facebook cookie-wise at the time. Facebook knows you're visiting these sites, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And that of course, is a huge problem, potentially. I mean, but it's the same with Google. I mean, Google has moved to, you know, unify everything around your Google profile. Mm. I mean, Google Plus, some people might say, hasn't been that much of a success. But if you look at the way Google is getting everybody to stay logged in all the time to have a richer experience, you know, there's a huge trade-off there. So, I mean, if you go to any website that's got a Google Plus One button on it, it knows as soon as you click on the button who you are. Now, I don't know how much data...
It knows before that, Michaela. It knows as soon as you load the page, surely.
Well, it would do. If, I mean, if I search on Google and then go to another website, it knows who I am.
Exactly.
I mean, there was already a big thing. Was it around Google or Yahoo? I think it was actually Yahoo that had a huge amount of data about people's search habits and browsing habits that was released there. I think it's going back 5 or 6 years. And I remember there was a lot of controversy around that. I mean, now it's not just Facebook. I mean, Facebook is just one of them. There's several others. And, you know, they know a hell of a lot about us. They know they can target us more.
This is the thing. So that when I go, for example, and use the official download link to download what Facebook knows about me, I'm looking at this and laughing because that isn't the real stuff that Facebook knows about me. Facebook knows a hell of a lot more. What are you thinking about, Sher? Are you concerned about this?
Well, I told you recently that it's really insane what are they doing with all those data. Because if you use Facebook advertising, you can see that you can, you know, approach people in very different ways. And that's the fact that they know really, really a lot about us. And they will use it, you know, to target us more precisely and to take more money from us. And it's a process that's going through the years, and you know it's getting better and better. And no one's asking us actually if you want to share their data or no. Well, that's the biggest problem, and people do not actually think about all those data that they are sharing when they serve the internet.
Well, we could log out, we could go off the grid, we could use all kinds of privacy measures, but we wouldn't get the same internet experience that we like to get. We like to stay logged into Facebook. We like to we like the way we go to search on Google, and there's a certain amount of social search about it. That we like the fact that it throws up in our search results links from our friends and things that our friends have blogged about and stuff like that as well. There's the trade-off right there. We could go off the grid, couldn't we?
Well, I mean, if you posted another link in the notes there, Con, about was it the Calix Institute wanting to set up an encrypted ISP?
That's right. This we'll put a link into that. I think that might be even a discussion all on its own, perhaps, or certainly a blog post. This is a company that is proposing to set up an ISP with end-to-end encryption, making them, and this is the interesting thing, it comes in relation to CISPA, which is and this is where it all gets interesting, because this is like son of SOPA and PIPA. This is the new act that's going through houses in the of legislation in the United States. It's about sharing information between service providers and security services. There's a certain amount of that going on, as we know, but this kind of formalizes it. This is interesting, this Calix Institute, because they're saying they want to set up an internet service provider which would be physically unable to comply with a request, even a court order or any kind of request from security services to provide information, because of the fact that every single bit of traffic that's going over its services is actually encrypted. They're going to encrypt everything, email the whole lot. It's an interesting idea. What do you think of it, Michele?
I think it's going to it's going to really upset law enforcement. Unless, of course, law enforcement already have the keys. I mean, if they have some way of decrypting it. But if the most recent hard copy edition of Wired magazine, there was a big thing about, I think it's the NSA. They're building this massive data center and storage complex, and it's all to do with number crunching the data that they've intercepted. Because, you know, they're intercepting huge amounts of data, phone calls, emails, web traffic, email traffic. And, you know, ultimately, if Uncle Sam can watch it in some way, well, then they probably won't care. But at the same time, there's a very heated debate going on in, you know, law enforcement, security and government circles about, you know, having access to data in order to, you know, do their job. So it's kind of worrying, because at the same time, you know, it's not as if the real criminal isn't going to find some way to get around it anyway. So, you know, encryption systems, there's other things like Tor, there's so many of these other technologies that people use, they're going to use them anyway.
Could you foresee a situation where encryption in certain circumstances could be outlawed?
Well, it already is. I mean, don't you remember back in the day when SSL wasn't allowed over a certain number of bits? It couldn't be used for export from the US.
That's right. It was 100. Was it 128 bits or no? It was much less actually, wasn't it? It was something much smaller. I think that you couldn't export technologies to a certain blacklist of countries. I remember that.
But we still have that. I mean, yeah. as an ICANN accredited registrar. We are bound over in some cases by US law. And when you sign a contract with VeriSign, which is the registry for .com and .net, there's certain little things that they ask you to attest to, and it involves, you know, transfer of data to certain things that you're not using things in a particular way, and it all comes back to these kind of block lists. I mean, a US registrar, for example, cannot registered domain names to Iranians. You know, if you are in Iran, you cannot register a .com through an American registrar. They're not allowed, because there's an American company that are allowed to trade with Iran. Now, that maybe Iran isn't on the list anymore, but there's a list that the US has of countries where they're not allowed to do business. I mean, if you remember, Cuba, for example, was completely blacklisted.
Well, what do you think, Nebojsa? In principle, should we be allowed to encrypt whatever we like? Is our privacy our own business? If we use an ISP or any kind of an online service, should we be able to use a service that isn't going to hand that data over to security services? Or ultimately, I mean, is there a legitimate prevention of crime case here as well? What's your feeling on it?
The more I know about it, it freaks me out more. You know, it's really hard to know that everything you do online is, you know, somewhere in someone's hands. But I really doubt that it's going to be some kind of mainstream service. The people who will use that will probably be early adopters and those tech guys who know actually what kind of data is shared with you know, authorities and stuff. So for the most people who use internet services, it's going to be just like it's now. And only those guys who are more techy will actually use those encryption things, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's true.
So technically, that's the saddest part. It's not going to be mainstream. And still, no matter how hard we fight against those things, it's going to stay the same. You know, people will just use internet as they use. They will like everything, use Facebook, share their data, and be, you know, abused in advertising purposes, because they have no idea that what they are doing online is so much, you know, tracked and shared.
We're going to hear more about CISPA. It's early days, really, and any kind of legislation, and particularly in the United States, this has been the trend. This is going to go through a lot of amendments, and it's going to go through a lot of changes probably over the next weeks and months. Do you think this is an interesting initiative, or is it just the latest wave, I suppose, of internet legislation? Is it too early to say anything meaningful about it, Michele, or what's your impression at this stage?
Well, it's something that we've been discussing in internet policy circles for the last few weeks, and I came across an article earlier this evening where the White House has come out quite critically on this, because one of the areas that they've started getting quite vocal about is getting the balance, you know, with respect to privacy. So if the White House doesn't like the current version of the bill, then, yeah, it's going to go through multiple iterations. I mean, whether something's going to come out the far end or not, it's too early to say, but this is not something that's going to go away. I mean, we've had SOPA, we've had PIPA, now we've got CISPA. If that doesn't go through, somebody's going to come up with something else, because there are real concerns that, you know, intellectual property people want to address, that people in law enforcement dealing with serious crimes want to address. But of course, you know, you've got to get that balance right. And, you know, even here in Ireland last night, what day is today? Today is Wednesday. So last night was Tuesday, just so I can remember the days of the week. Primetime, which is a current affairs program on Irish television, did a bit on the entire copyright debacle. And, you know, that copyright review, it's still ongoing and people still have time to submit their comments on it.
It's been extended, hasn't it, to the end of May?
Yeah, it has. And it's just, you know, I'd love to know how many people have submitted comments on it. But I've a sneaking suspicion that a lot of people are very, very vocal on blogging and tweeting and posting stuff on Facebook about it. But I don't think they're actually going to make submissions through that process. And that really is the way that they should be focusing their efforts.
Well, I have to say I've certainly been glad of the extension of that deadline, because I do plan to study that copyright review document more. We'll certainly be coming back to that again. There's a whole load of stuff to talk about. This has got to be our longest podcast ever, Michele.
No, it's not our longest.
No?
Let's try to go out on something a bit more upbeat.
We will. I'm going to drop the story about Chris Horn of Iona and what he was saying about NASDAQ. We're going to talk. We might fit that in next week. I think it was very interesting, and I'll blog about it.
We should talk about zombies.
We should definitely talk about zombies.
I think we need to talk about zombies.
I love this, Michele. As we know, you're on a weight loss program at the moment, and you're blogging your experiences in relation to this. Your latest blog post is just fantastic. I love the whole concept. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this is okay. As Nabosh and I were actually talking about this earlier this evening as well. I don't like walking in circles. I don't like it. I can't see the point to do it. I mean, fine, if you drop me into some foreign city, somewhere I've never been, I'll quite happily pound the streets for hours every single day as I explore the city and, you know, discover what's there. But if you're here, I am, I'm living in Carlow, and I need to walk, I need to exercise. But why on earth would I want to walk a route in which is essentially in a circle? I can't see the point.
I think this is brilliant. This crowd have come up with an idea to make a game.
They've come up with a solution for me.
Yeah, they've gamified exercise.
Yes.
Go on.
It's genius. what they've done is they've created this iPhone app.
Yeah.
And it's a totally immersive experience. And, you know, you plug in your headphones into your iPhone. And it'll be available on Android eventually. I don't think it is yet. Mm. And the entire concept is that, you know, it's the zombie apocalypse, and you've got your town or city or whatever it is, and you've got a certain amount of resources already there. And as you exercise, be that walking or running or jogging or whatever works for you, it uses the phone's GPS. And it gives you audio cues, and as you go along, you pick up items. I mean, virtually, you don't actually pick them up.
So you can pretend you're living in the zombie apocalypse. You've been sent on a mission, for example, to pick up medical supplies or something like that.
Yeah.
You're listening to the audio cues in your ear, like your controller is there saying, you know, go the next three blocks, turn right. Watch out, we've heard a report of zombies in your area. There's actually, has this been developed, or are they looking for funding? I was watching the promotional video that you blogged. And let's give a plug to your site as well, fat.ie, great URL, and you're a great man for domains, Michele, as we know. So you've blogged it there. We'll put a link into it as well here. But this isn't fully developed, or they're looking for funding, etc.
The video, I mean, unfortunately, the video that they put up on YouTube, which is the one I blogged about, it's the one that they put out when they were trying to get funding on Kickstarter.
Okay, so it's a kind of a pitch for funding, but it actually has been developed. It's called Zombies Run! ! Let's listen to a few minutes of this, because I thought this was fantastic, and I can see why you blogged it as well. So we've got somebody getting ready. She's a girl putting on her sneakers, getting ready to go for her workout, putting her iPod headphones in.
Zombies Run!
She
is
clicks
about
on the app.
Running and about zombies.
Raise the gates.
You're in a post-apocalyptic world, and you are being chased by zombies.
You're trying to build up the city that you live in, trying to collect supplies, help people out. There may be something dark and sinister going on other than the zombies.
You basically put your headphones in, you go and press run, and when you're running, you go and hear instructions, you go and hear the story through your headphones.
This should be a real easy run, Modified. Just a regular med supply run to the hospital out to the west. Run safe, okay?
So we're in a zombie apocalypse. We all know how that plays out. You're going to be chased by fiends reaching for your brains. But there are bigger questions out there. How did this happen? Does someone know more than they're telling? Are you going to be able to find out the truth?
The game's got two parts. first part is when you're out on a mission and you're collecting items and you're collecting important things from the base. Then when you get back home and you finish your run, what you do is you get to go and assign those items to different parts of the base to help it grow. And by helping the base grow...
Just going to fade that down there. That is absolutely fantastic. It's everything. It's Runkeeper. It's a game. It's incredible, Michele. I'm just really blown away by this whole idea. I have visions of you running around Carlo with a terrified look on your face now, Michele.
Well, this is the entire thing. I mean, this is what I want to do. Now, admittedly, as with everything involving me and physical exercise, there's a lot of research and development.
Yeah. But this is fantastic. You're impressed by this, Nabosha.
Hat tip to Super Kelly, or Kelly Hardy, who does a lot of PR work for us.
Yeah.
She's the one who put me onto this.
Wow.
Because she downloaded it and tried it and was so taken with the entire thing that she immediately emailed me, go, you have to get this. You have to try this thing. You have to look at this. It's not, and just a heads up, it's not a cheap app. I mean, I think it's €5.99 at the moment on the App Store, but it's worth it. I mean,
this is interactive theater. That's what this is. You know, you're getting fit, you're doing your exercise, and you're playing along with a game that's going on in your head. There's drama, there's radio drama, there's all kinds of elements to this. You're impressed, Nabosha.
Yeah, I can't wait integration with Google Glasses, because it's going to be interesting to see 3D zombies that are chasing you, you know, around Dublin. So, I don't know, the gamification is going to change lots of things, especially, you know, learning new stuff, because especially for kids, for example, you know, all those dull stuff can be done much, much easier and much better when you're playing games at the same time. So I'm looking forward to try it as well. Thank you, Michele, for the link.
It's like
I think it is a game changer, this kind of technology. I mean, this is really cool.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And our lives are, you know, weight loss process. So it's always interesting to find those things online.
Excellent. It's like a spoonful of sugar, metaphorically speaking, to make the medicine go down. Michele, thanks for putting that my way. Nabosha Radovich of ENIACS.net, thank you very much for joining us on the technology.ie podcast this week. Talk to you next week, Michele.
Yes, talk to you then. And Nabosha, thanks very much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
I really had a great time, so I'm looking forward to be here again. So whenever you have some interesting themes, topics, I'll be on your service.
Themes and topics. Or at least we try to, anyway.
We'd love to have you, Nabosha, and thanks again. That's it for this week. Until next week, Slongafoid.
Slongafoid.
Slongafoid.